time to discuss and meetings in honor of John K, who told me to do steps 6 and 7 out of the 12 and 12, so we're going to do it. But first, in honor of Jimmy, I'm going to read from the old handout, which some of you brought. We spent several weeks on 6 and 7. Why do I do that? I think there are two groups of people in AA. One read the Not Drinking book and one read the God book. And there's those who do 6 and 7 and those who don't. And why do I say that? If you're doing 6 and 7, you're working the steps. You're trying to change your personality. You're trying to become the person God created. If you're not, it's just fantasy. Now, I'm not saying you should do it or you're good or bad. I'm not judging. I'm just saying for me, if I'm not doing 6 and 7, it's fantasy. And so in the Drop the Rock, I'm just going to read this paragraph. You don't have to have your hand out. The outlook of two AA meetings, members. This is what 6 and 7. Don D. went to an AA meeting one evening. He frowned when a member mispronounced a few words while reading how it works. Any frowners in here? Appalled when another member stood up and said he was an alcoholic and addict. Another person talked too long. Anybody been in a meeting where you thought somebody talked too long? I was there yesterday. I was going to stuff a towel in his mouth. No, I'm teasing. It didn't occur to me. As he slipped out the door immediately after the meeting, Don D. muttered, "That was terrible. I should have stayed home." Bob B. went to a meeting one evening. His head was bowed as he listened to the preamble and how it works. His eyes moistened as he listened intently to a member tell his story. He was grateful for being able to attend the meeting. After cleanup and a little socializing, he paused, and as he locked the meeting room door, his thoughts were, "Thank God for such a beautiful fellowship." Both AA members were at the same meeting. And here's the key, each found what he was looking for. I talk about it all the time. Whatever you bring into a situation is what you get out of it. And then I just wanted to go over this because to me, when I read this the first time, it's in Drop the Rock. This man is talking about his character defects. And he's talking about humility and believing my character defects were more powerful than my higher power's forgiveness. Anybody do that? So you play God? You don't want to forgive yourself? And he says, "My character defects were what I thought made up my personality, and I was pretty much in love with who I thought I was." Anybody else? Who would want to be in love with the left side of this page? We must have been, because we practiced this. This is the way we lived. He said, "Self-will had been my higher power for a lifetime. With the honesty I was capable of, I worked the steps in order 1 through 6, then 7, asking humbly as I could that my higher power remove my shortcomings." Anybody think that's a good idea? Yeah. Sure. "They did not disappear. I was not struck pure. But here's the deal. Then I was made aware that character defects are like active addiction. I couldn't keep using and expect God to relieve my disease. I can't keep practicing my character defects and expect God to remove them." That may be the most profound thing I've ever read in anywhere about AA. I can't practice the left-hand side and God remove them. Step 6 and 7 is action. It's not waking up one day saying, "Oh, I'm going to do better, God. I want to be on the right-hand side. Let's have a great day." That's not the deal. The deal is throughout the day to recognize with God when I'm on the left-hand side, when I'm being selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, fearful, envy, jealous, judgmental, and say, "God, change me. Practice a different way." And Joe and Charlie made the point, and I had to stop when I listened to it, that when you get to step 6 and 7, you can't blame anybody else for your day. Your day is what you make of it. Your day is what you practice. So now, in honor of John K., we're going to look at step 6 in the 12 and 12. And there's some good information in here. My only problem with the 12 and 12, and it's my problem, it's no one else's, I take full ownership, is that I know some new people are given the 12 and 12 and told to work the steps out of it. They don't understand that there's a big book and a textbook. It's not their fault. The 12 and 12 was written not as a textbook, but a series of essays by Bill W. himself. He wrote it, he edited it himself. Nobody else had anything to do with it. And it's a very good essays on his thoughts of the steps after 15 years of sobriety. And when you read it today, you'll see it's an essay style. It's not. It's in a different style than the big book completely. And he says, step six is, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So I wrote, what does entirely ready mean? Does entirely ready mean almost ready? Entirely ready, it's like surrender, right, Gary? Do we surrender a little bit or do we surrender all? And what makes us entirely ready? Being completely defeated. And how do you know you're entirely ready? When you do steps four and five and you see what your life was like and how your self-will created fear, anger, resentments, harm people, your conduct. If you're not entirely ready, do it again. And you're entirely ready to what? To have God remove your character defects. God does the work. I don't remove my character defects. I don't wake up every day and say, I'm going to do better. We have a whole paragraph in the big book that I used to read a lot. Now I really understand it. And in honor of Jimmy's birthday, I'm going to actually read it. And it's short. You don't have to turn to your books. But in We Agnostic, it says, I could have codes and philosophies did not save me no matter how much we tried. I could wish to be moral. I could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, I could will these things with all my might, but the needed power wasn't there. My human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. I cannot do this. God does it. God removes it. But if I'm entirely ready, God will remove it. And if I'm not entirely ready, have a party. God's not going to remove them. See, the six and seven steps are very practical. I'm going to steal Ed. He won't have to share today, but I'm going to say, if I don't change my sobriety deal, right, Ed? Yeah. It's about changing. Betty's changed a lot in 46 years. She's probably changed the last few years more than she changed the few years before. And we have to continue to change. Why? Because alcoholism is there all the time. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. Remember, at certain times, my willpower will not be sufficient to keep me from the first drink. 46 years, believe it or not, Betty could drink tonight. She won't, I know she won't, because she has God in her life. So it says, and how does God remove these defects of character? They just happen. Suddenly, I was in a meeting yesterday and I was judging somebody. What a shock. I turned to Joe. I said, oh God, he's reading the announcements again. Oh my God. I said, and Joe, and I laugh at myself because I say it's all about me, Joe, because I don't think he should read them that long and then it'll keep me from talking. You see, it's all about me. So I just laughed and I said, you know, it helps him. And it's fine. I mean, it's a simple thing, but we do that all the time. So I wasn't disturbed. I was laughing at myself. We can't stop from practicing our character defects. They come up, but we can stop living in them. I mean, not really practice. We can't stop having them come up, but we don't have to practice them. We don't have to give them power. We can laugh at ourselves. I still like the Sandy Beach story. There are two groups of people at the country club. There's the one group where everybody's talking about how much money they made this week, and they're shooting 70 on the golf course, and they've got four mistresses and eight cars, and they bought their fifth home, and everything's great. And then the other table is a bunch of alcoholics sitting around saying, you know, at 10 o'clock I was disturbed, but then I said, you know, I'm judging, and I'm going to stop judging, and I was wrong again. And then this one said, yeah, I was wrong twice today. And this one goes, I was wrong five times today. And it's a whole different view of what makes a life successful. I thought that made a lot of sense to me. So I wrote, what are the defects of character? And then this came to me. It's brilliant. I should copyright this. It's the opposite of God's character. Think about it. This is God's character. We talk about the personal characteristic of God's will. This is God's character. My defects of character are just the opposite. Now, which one is going to produce a better life for me and a better day for me? Being the person God created or the person Michael created? Now, we can come to AA and go to all the meetings and stay sober for a long time and still practice our personality. I don't want to do that. I don't want to live that way anymore. So the gift of AA is not that I'm not drinking or using. It's the fact that I don't have to live a self-centered personality unless I choose to. What a gift. And he's going to talk about that. This is what step six in this is all about. Why we should be entirely ready and what happens if we're entirely ready. It's more of a theological look at step six. And if you look at it that way, it's very powerful. He says this step separates the men from the boys. There are women here, girls from the women. So declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. This was Father Dowling. He goes on to explain that any perceivable, and I love this, capable enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly steps 6 and 7 in all his thoughts. See, it's a constant thing that we do all the time, right? Without any reservations whatever. Notice that's in squiggly writing. I can't hold back. I want to do it all the time. Has indeed come a long way spiritually and is entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own creator. I love that. And that's what the deal is. And here's the thing. I want to grow in the image and likeness of my creator, not my creation. See, when I came in, I created me. I'm the only one responsible for being a self-centered a-hole. Sorry, I didn't mean to cuss. But I can't, that's not God's fault. It's not my wife's fault or the ex-girlfriend or whatever. It was me. I did that. And I want to grow in the likeness and image of my creator, not me. Now, what happens is in AA, people worship their own creation. They worship themselves. And they can't see it. And they say, no, I don't want to do that anymore. And then you ask them to do something. And they say, no, I don't think I need to do that. Or no, I don't want to do that. You see, we do it subconsciously. So do you want to grow in the image and likeness of God? Isn't that why we pray in the morning and what we ask for each day? And we want to be in the image and likeness of our Creator. Well, how do we do that? We have to be willing and honest to try repeatedly step 6 on all my thoughts. Without reservation. So I have to be entirely ready to be willing of my judgment yesterday when I had it for 5 seconds. And I didn't want to keep it. I can't help it. I like to judge. I'm very good at it. Anybody else good at it? I mean, I really am good at it. I could sit here and go around the room and tell everybody what's wrong with them. How would that make me feel? Terrible. And I laugh at myself. We're very good at it. Joe and Charlie said we are all pros at practicing selfish behavior. Why? We did it our whole lives. We don't even realize we're doing it. But if you work steps 1 through 5, you will realize you're doing it. That's the spiritual awakening. I awaken to when I'm broken. And I'm broken when I'm over here. So I thought that was really well said. Of course, this is, and here he talks next paragraph, can God remove my defects of character? And then in the last paragraph, he says, sure, he removed your obsession to drink, didn't he? Anybody have had the obsession the drink removed? Yeah. So that's powerful, isn't it? Because we couldn't do that. If we could do it, we didn't need AA, right? And he says, if God can do that, why can't he do everything? So in the next page, page 64, it says, every sober AA member has been granted a release from this obstinate and potentially fatal obsession. So in a very complete literal way, all AAs have become entirely ready to have God remove the mania for alcohol from their lives. Is anybody entirely ready to do that? Now here's the thing, how do you know if you're entirely ready to have God remove that? You've really taken the first step. And that's why if you don't really take the first step, you're not really entirely ready. You got some working notion back here that someday, somehow, you'll be able to drink. It said, God has done that. Now, how do I keep and remove this release? See, that's the thing. He talks about God has removed the obsession. Anybody had the obsession removed today? Everybody? Anybody? All right, if you have, that's great, isn't it? But how do you keep that? How do you keep that obsession removed? That's what's not in this chapter. How do I keep it removed? I have to stay close to God and do His work well. I have to do 6 and 7 all the time. Because guess what? The obsession can come back. It says, having been granted a perfect release from alcoholism, why shouldn't he be able to receive the same a perfect release from every other difficulty or defect? This is the riddle of our existence. Why don't we give everything to God? Who keeps me from perfect release of my character defects? Me. Good job. And then things don't go well, and then we say, how'd that happen, right? And it's he talks in the next paragraph, when we pour alcohol into ourselves, we're committing an act of self-destruction. Anybody agree with that? We're actually committing suicide, and we don't realize it. And it says, as they're humbled by the terrific beating administered by alcohol, this is a very powerful line, humbled. When I'm humbled by alcohol, it says when we're beaten into a state of reasonableness in the big book, beaten. That's why when I see people come here and say, you know, yeah, alcohol's been a real problem for me. And I think my wife and I decided we're going to quit. Well, I don't know if they're beaten or not. I don't know. I can't judge that. But I want to hear people who are really beaten, because then they become humbled. And it says then the grace of God can enter them and expel their obsession. So if I'm humbled by alcohol, the grace of God can come in. And the thing I got out of this is I'm not humbled. God can't work in my life. If I'm not humbled, and how do we get humbled? By understanding our sinfulness and our inability to live a life without sinful behavior without God. It's not possible. And it says, humbled is required to receive the grace of God. And I said, the need to stay humbled, how? By my connection to the first step. I have to understand my powerless to manage, and it's not about alcohol, it's powerless to manage my life. Powerless to manage my life without running the show. And then the steps 10, 11 is how we do that all day long. Why? Because we want to run the show all the time. It's part of our nature. It's the way God created us. But God also gave us the power to stop doing that and come to Him. See, God could have made us so that we were perfect and we never separated from Him, but that's not the way it works. The way it works is that He loves us when we come back to Him. He loves us when we're away. It's the prodigal son. But once we turn away from ourselves to God, He's got His arms open and He's there to hug us. I don't know, God's hugs are great. It's a hint. It feels great when you turn to God and He's there for you. He says most of our character difficulties don't fall under such a character. He says every normal person wants to eat. We got any eaters in here? Reproduce and be somebody in the society of his fellows. Now this being somebody is what kills us. Remember Bill W. said the drive for success was on. That's page 3 and page 8. He's completely defeated. Quicksand surround him, right? Alcohol was his master. And he says, and we all want to reproduce, be somebody. And those are the instincts of life that I've talked about. And Jimmy, you know, yesterday I was looking for this handout. I'd done this handout a while ago, but then I decided that I didn't want to do step 6 in the 12 and 12. And I had it there. And I have a whole tub full of papers that I've given out through the years. And all I said to myself was, I don't know if anybody's gotten anything out of it, but boy, you really tried, Michael. I mean, a whole tub full of, and Jimmy brought a whole bunch of them today. So here's another one. So these instincts of life is what lead me astray. They're not good or bad. And he talks about, we gave up the instinct for alcohol to stay alive, right? We had to. Now, if we turn the page, and this is really powerful stuff, it's nowhere evident that God wants us to eliminate our instinctual drives. We need to have them to survive. And so most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires. Now here's the problem. I decide when I need to be happy. Anybody else do that? I lived under the delusion, it says on page 61, and this is what killed me, nothing else. I was under the delusion that I could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of life if what? I managed well. How many times have I quoted that line? And it's a delusion. And so I was under this delusion that if I could manage everything well, I'd be happy. It got me a wristband. My life was miserable. Anybody else's life's miserable when they come in here? Betty can describe it to someone how bad her life was. I've heard her story. And it's only bad inside. It's bad inside. And it says they drive us blindly, or we willfully demand that they supply us with more satisfactions or pleasures that are possible to do us. And here's the key. So I decide what I need to be happy, and then I depart from the degree of perfection that God wishes for me. We're not happy with what we have. That's why people say attitude of gratitude, right? They want more. More will never satisfy you. It's never enough. Chuck C. said, the human ego is never satisfied. I could never fix the world out there, so I'd be okay. It would last an hour a day, right? A week. But then my ego would say, well, you could have more, Michael, or that wasn't good enough, right? Anybody else have an ego that talks to them? I got a hint. Stop listening to that person. Well, the best thing, most profound thing I ever heard was the speaker says that when his mind starts to talk to him, he asks his mind, what's the source of information? Now think of that, because it's crap. Now we have this thing in our head that tells us things that are not true. How do we learn not to listen to them? By working the steps. And when you work the steps and you start to judge, I say, well, that's my judger. I don't need to listen to my judger. That's not God. God's love. So love. And as soon as you do that, it changes. He says, this is the measure of our character defects, or if you wish, our sins. I don't think they talk about sin enough in the big book because nobody would read it. But it's really the bondage of sin, our separation from God through our self-centeredness and our character defects is where we depart from what God wants from me. So when I'm being selfish, I'm departing from what God wants. I'm seeing it through Michael, not God. When I'm judging, I'm seeing people through Michael, not God. When I'm ambitions, my ambitions are Michael-driven, not God ambitions. Remember, it says in the big book that we're going to change our whole way of being. We're going to be of what? To fit ourselves maximally to do what? To serve God and others. Fit ourselves spiritually to serve God and others. If we do that, we're okay. Remember, anybody take the third step in here? Anybody like the third step? It's a good step. Well, the third step is a contract with God. If I do as you would have me, and I stay close to you, I'll get everything I need. Not want, but need. And all I have to do is do the actions of the steps. Now, what does it mean, need? It puts I need spiritually. My desires for life will be satisfied to the level God thinks I need them, not want them. And it says, if we want God to remove our defects, we want them, but we're not going to be rendered white as snow. Any snow whiters in here? And it says, forgive our derelictions. We're not going to be white as snow. But here it is. It's very well written. That is something we are supposed to be willing to work toward ourselves. Isn't that what it means, entirely ready? To have God removed, that I have to be willing to work to have my derelictions removed. God's not going to do it. Now, what makes you willing to do that? You look at your life in steps 1 through 5. You look at your life. And you look at your night. Every night we're to review our day. Where was I selfish, dishonest, resentful, afraid? Where was I back with my derelictions again? And it says, I ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective actions. Was I kind and loving to all? What did I pack into the stream of life? You look each night at how well you do 6 and 7. Step 10 is where you're doing 6 and 7 every minute. You watch with God for selfishness, dishonest, resentment, fear, and consideration. When these crop up, as soon as they start to crop up, like yesterday, there goes the judger. I have to stop and say, God, remove it at once. and if I have to discuss it with another human being. So you see, this, what he's talking about now is a way of life, which if practiced will make you usefully whole. We're practicing a new design for living. That's what 6 and 7 is about. It says in step 6, it was entirely ready to have these defects. We have to have the best possible attitude. So one thing you could pray for each day is the best possible attitude to carry out God's will. And it's a lifetime job. So did you have the best possible attitude this morning? What were you thinking about? Did you ask God to direct your thinking or not? Did you ask him to remove your character defects? Or were you thinking about yourself? And it's a lifetime job. And then he says, the key words entirely ready underline the fact that we want to aim at the very best we know or can learn. And I don't know that I like that. I like the very best we can do. But if I don't know or learn it, I can't do it. So that's why the big book is a source of information, so you can do it. Knowing it and learning the big book won't change me. I have to do it. And then they talk about this degree of readiness. Are we really ready to have God do all this? And they talk about the extremes of behavior. You know, we may not murder someone, but we may have anger, right? On the next paragraph, I'm not going to read the whole thing. But on the third paragraph, it says, we have escaped these extremes. We're apt to congratulate ourselves. Well, I didn't murder anybody today, right? Great, I didn't commit adultery today. You know, I'm not a thief today, so we're good, right? But we were thieves in our minds, and we were angry, and we were lustful. It says, self-interest that enabled us most to escape. So we didn't murder anybody because that would have a lot of punishment, right? But we might have kept anger towards somebody all day, right? And who does that punish? Me. He says, not much spiritual effort is involved in avoiding excesses which bring us punishment. Because remember, we're self-centered. We want to preserve ourselves. But here's the key. He said, we recognize now that we exult in some of our defects. We really love them. Who, for example, doesn't like to feel superior to the next fellow? Any superiors in here? Or even quite a lot superior? Isn't that what we naturally do? You hear at meetings, the new person says, well, I'm not as bad as that one. I don't have a DUI yet. I still have a job. You know, they're comparing themselves. You know, I'm not that bad. I'm not as bad as that one. Well, you'll drink over that thought. Isn't it true that we like to greed masquerizes ambition? To think liking less seems impossible? And here's one. Self-righteous anger. Anybody have that? Anything that's self-righteous is bad. But self-righteous means you just separate from God and you're deciding what's right. Can be very enjoyable. Anybody enjoy their self-righteous anger? We take satisfaction in the fact that many people annoy us. For it brings a comfortable feeling of superiority. Whenever alcoholics get together and they talk, they're all discussing other people in AA. And it's always like, this one said this, or this one didn't do that. You know, we do it naturally. It's the 13th step. It brings us a comfortable feeling of superiority. I felt superior by judging others. That was very sick. I don't want to feel good by judging others. I want to feel good by serving God. I don't want to be a judger anymore. I have to fight that all the time. I have to work 6 and 7 all the time. Gossip barbed with our anger is a polite form of character assassination. Any character assassinators in this room? It says, we're not trying to help those we criticize. We're trying to proclaim our own righteousness. Don't you see this in AA all the time? Do you see it in church? You can see it in any group. People are a little bit better than everybody else, and then that separates people in the group. And since it does that, then you're not all united under God. And then they talk about sloth, and we'll go to page 68. And they talk about how we all want to get rid of our milder defects, right? Anybody, we have certain things on here we want to be rid of and some we don't. I don't know. I'm ready to be rid of all of them today. I've had enough of all of them. I'm entirely ready. It says, therefore, it seems plain that few of us can quickly or easily become ready to aim at spiritual moral perfection. And here's the key. We want to settle for only as much perfection as will get us by in life. I think that's a brilliant statement. Isn't it true? Isn't that true of the program? I'll just do as much as I need to do to stay sober, right? And then you're sober and nothing's changed. And you say, well, I might as well drink. I'm not doing any better. This didn't work. According, of course, to our various and sundry ideas of what will get us by. So the difference between the boys and the men is the difference between striving for a self-determined objective and for the perfect objective, which is God. What are you striving for? Now, how much do you need to keep from drinking or to be happy, joyous, and free? How much can you settle for? You see, what step? How many steps do you need to get by in life? And we said, who decides that? We do. And as soon as I decide that, I'm in trouble. It could be subtle. You've been going to meetings for 10 years, and you say, I'm not going to go to this meeting anymore. And then before you know it, you're not going to the other meeting. And your mind's telling you things that aren't true. And here's the deal. Don't we carry a vision of God's will in all of our affairs? Isn't that what we must carry in all of our affairs? God's vision, his will for me, and I talk about it all the time. His will for me is to be his character, to bring love in every situation. That's what we need to think about all the time. I'm going to stop there. Try to bring your handout next week. I think there's only a couple more pages. And then I'm going to do step 7 in the 12 and 12 in honor of John. Did anybody think this was good? Good stuff? Good stuff. Thank you, John, for helping me do that.